Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to In the Spotlight. I am your host, Tamika Patrice Kane. 3 times a month, we bring you the authors with the most flaming pens in the literary arena, the publishers dedicated to producing the hottest books, and industry professionals who are sure to take your books to the next level. Today's featured guests are authors Phyllis Forrest and poet and author Vince Robinson. We'll bring Vince on first. So before I do that, let me just give a little background here. So Vince and I go back years, like 15 years. And so when I was new and kind of just branching out into the poetry circle, he actually gave me my very first out-of-town gig. So like Vince is a very special friend. I'm very glad to have him on the show. Vince, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Tamika. It's a pleasure to be here.
Yes. Always good to connect with you. So let's go ahead and jump on in. Why don't you tell us about your book, Got Words?
Well, Got Words was a labor of love. You know, I've been writing poetry since I was a student at Kent State University back in the 70s, and I've been collecting all of these poems and saying, you know, I want to do a book. And then in 2013, I finally approached a publisher about helping me get started, and so I did. And the result of that is the collection of poems that I've come up with the title of Got Words. Got Words is a question mark, and it's actually a performance piece that I did in the 2003 National Poetry Slam, and ironically, it's an anti-slam poem, so figure that.
Okay. All right. So I love that. So you want to talk a little bit about the title, you know, or you?
Yeah.
Not so much. Okay, go ahead.
The title is Got Words. And the subtitle is, I heard what you said, but what did you say? And it was really born out of my frustration with the slam poetry scene and open mic poetry and, you know, going out and hear people do poems that really didn't have a whole lot of substance and relying more on theatrics than content. So that's actually where that poem came from. Some of the other poems in the book are performance pieces. Some of them are more recent things that I've written about life and about personal circumstances, but in a poetic way. So it's a diverse collection of poetry that I've written, most of it within the past 10 years or so, but some of it is, you know, obviously more recent.
Okay. So speaking of poetry, why don't you go ahead and regale us with one of your poems? Would love to hear something.
Okay, I think I'm going to do Got Words just so folks can understand where I was coming from.
That's
Got
it.
Words, and the subtitle is, I heard what you said, but what did you say? I know what you're thinking. He's reading from the page. How could he possibly be a poet? Real poets keep words in their heads for moments like these when what you say is not as important as how you say it. So in order for them to get it, one must flap arms in the breeze as if one were singing R. Kelly's anthem for an ostrich, or flip triple somersaults as flawlessly as Dominic Dawes does. But there will be no spontaneous breakdancing here, no DJ scribble-style sounds in your ears, or rapid-fire rantings that mimic Bone Thugs and Harmony lyrics over pedantic sampled frantic music. And there will not be pornographic descriptions of sex that really only takes place in one's imagination and somehow stretches 3 minutes into 3 hour marathons of uninterrupted, unbridled ecstasy to be shared with strangers. No braggadocious platinum. My rims are bigger than your Tim's are not as fly as my fat pharmacological inspiration is dope because my scarf under my baseball cap cocked to the side makes me a real man. So I'm a thug and you just don't understand me. You know what I'm saying? Kind of poetry ain't in me. And I'm past the black this, black that, sing song, want to be a rapper but can't get a record deal, trying to segue into spoken word artist vibe and hope that in the meantime somebody hears a rhyme that will make millions for the same moguls that rape millions of minds with nonsense called popular music, brain dead listening, braids too tight. Cannabis sativa has taken the fight out of them. No dreams will take flight for them, but if only I could get on Deaf Poetry Jam, then I could really slam them so-called poets think. But why? You see, I'm a real poet. And I don't have to grab sagging denim every fifth step to keep from tripping. I can write complete sentences without unintended or intentional double negatives. I don't wrestle with English or Ebonics, for I am fluent in both and execute them with proficiency. And yes, I read from the page because I am first a writer, and the black and white blueprint before me will be left like footprints for you to walk in when I'm in the hereafter. And the words I leave will not require applause or laughter, gestures, nor animated banter or vain attempts at singing that turn into disaster, for I am not a singer, a dancer, an actor, or a gymnast. I do not possess a photographic memory. I am a poet. And most importantly, I am understood. Got words?
I love it. I love it. And so that was Vince Robinson reading a piece from his book called Got Words, and that was the title poem, Got Words. So, and he is a phenomenal poet. So why don't you tell us, where did your writing journey begin? You said that you started writing poetry when you were in college, but were you a writer before then?
Actually, I was a young poet. I can recall writing a poem for my very first girlfriend. And I think I wrote poetry even before then, but I never really thought of myself as a poet. I just knew that, you know, I could write. And then when I got to Kent State University, I took a class called the Black Writers Workshop with a fellow named Mwatabu Okanta. And Okanta at the time was a grad student, and he had this class, and he pulled me to the side, and he just basically told me, brother, you a poet. And I took him seriously. So after that, you know, I started writing and holding on to my stuff, and, you know, I've written probably over 1,000 poems since then.
Oh, wow. Wow. Okay. All right. So when did you know that you wanted to be an author? You know, being a writer is one thing, but being an author is a whole totally different ballgame. So when did you know that you wanted to do that?
Well, you know, being a writer, because I was a radio news reporter upon graduating from Kent State and, you know, involved in that type of writing every day. So I knew that I was a writer. And, you know, when the 90s came and I saw Spike Lee's first major film, She's Gotta Have It, I decided that I wanted to do a screenplay. But after that, you know, I really started thinking about, just because I had written so much stuff, just doing a book. So it was probably in the 90s that I really started seriously thinking about writing. But, you know, it took me until 2013 to get so serious about it that I actually created a product. And, you know, it's just one of those things. I mean, after you turn that magical age of 40, you know, you realize that there's no turning back, you know, and the things that you want to do, you need to do now, you know, because the future is not guaranteed. And as I sit here before you without any children, I also realized that there had to be some type of legacy. So that was a motivation right there.
Okay. Good stuff. Now, do you see yourself writing in other genres?
I do. You know, I see that you've put out a book, and I have actually a college acquaintance that wrote a novel that I read on my way to Panama and back. And it really energized me, you know, to think in terms of doing something myself. You know, I think I might start just by doing some short stories and then expanding from there. But I know that I got a few novels in me, but I'm involved in video production, and I'm looking at doing some documentaries very soon. And I'm also producing and directing and hosting a television show right now. So I'm looking to actually add other content, you know, in terms of the video production. So, you know, I also realized that writing requires a lot of discipline. You know, it's the type of thing that you really need to do every day. And because I've just launched a business and I'm opening up these other lanes, I know that it's going to be difficult for me to commit to writing a book right now. But I think in the meantime, I can assemble some of the other poems that I already have under my belt and create another publication that way, and
you know,
also consider doing a recording of some of the poetry that I've done.
Absolutely. Yes. So as a side note, you know, there's no right or wrong way to write. So, you know, you just do it. And, you know, sometimes it comes in spurts and sometimes it comes, you know, very systematic. But however it comes, it just comes, you know. So like my, you mentioned the book, so I actually have two novels and two collections of poetry. But like my first book, I wrote it, you know, just straight through. It took me 9 months. The next novel took me 15 years. And I thought I would start and stop. And when I went back and looked at all the pieces, I thought, oh, I have nothing. But I had written a third of the book over the course of all that starting and stopping over the years. It just didn't come sequentially. So, you know, there is no right or wrong. It's just write. You know, when the inspiration hits, just write, you know.
Yes.
And it'll all come together when it comes together, you know. But just keep putting pen to paper, you know.
Right.
And fingers
that's
to keys.
Actually, that's the advice that I give to a lot of people who talk to me about writing. You know, I spoke with a sister last week, and she told me about this character that she had created, and, you know, she knew a person who had written a few films and, you know, had done some theatrical works. They actually worked on a presentation of a stage reading of a piece about Emmett Till, you know, just a few months ago. But unfortunately, the author of that stage work, Charles Drew, passed away, and he was going to help her with this particular piece. And, you know, she was talking about the character, and I heard the character's voice, and, you know, she was expressing it to me. And I told her at one point, I said, look, just write it. You know, if you got ideas, just write them down. You can always go back, refine, tweak, take out, add, you know, so forth and so on.
Absolutely.
But the main thing is to get what you have inside on paper.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Yes. So you are not just a poet, you are a performance poet. You know, as we got a taste of when we first started the interview. Now tell us, how did you transition into performance poetry?
I guess it was just born out of my open mic experience and, you know, me being urged to participate in the slam poetry scene, you know. And the thing about slam poetry, you know, contrary to the piece that I did, it kind of demands that you take that quantum leap from just reading a poem to bringing that poem to life. So as I made that transition from, you know, open mic poet and poetry host to slam poet, that's how the performance was born. So, you know, even when I do my readings and I'm reading from the book, I still try to bring some element of performance into it because it just gives the audience a better grasp and a better understanding of your words when you give it that performance flair.
Absolutely. Now, you seem so natural behind the mic. You know, now, were you born natural behind the mic, or did you have to work your way into becoming natural behind the mic?
I think it is a consequence of my purpose because I have known for a long time that the reason that I'm on earth is to communicate. You know, I've affirmed my understanding of my purpose through a few different means, but, you know, I was doing television when I was in high school. I decided to give up the athletics because I was a thin guy, I was a slender guy when I was in high school, and I was all of 135 pounds, and I'm on the football field with guys that weigh 200 and 300 pounds, and
gotcha.
Somehow that math didn't add up, so my high school athletic career was short-lived. I decided to go into speech. And this is when I was in California at the same school that Cheryl Underwood went to high school at. I moved to Maslin, Ohio, and Maslin is the birthplace of high school football. And they take it so seriously that they actually had closed circuit television programming in Massillon, and they had, you know, a color announcer and play-by-play announcer. And
wow.
My junior year, I did color announcing, and then my senior year, I did play-by-play, and I was the voice of the Massillon Tigers. And
really?
We were broadcast all over the community, so I did that, and I also did the morning announcements on a program called Accent for the high school. So, you know, I was in kind of closed circuit radio, so to speak, but, you know, and then the television. And then when I got to Kent, I went into radio, and I ended up being the program director for the Black formatted radio. And I got a job following Wayne Dawson of Fox 8 News here in Cleveland at a radio station called WKNT. So I've been behind the mic since I was in high school.
Gotcha. So it's so interesting, and I'm loving this conversation that we're having, because I've known you all these years but didn't know all these details. So I'm just loving this. You know, getting a chance to learn my friend all over again. That's fantastic. So you were the host of a long-running series in Cleveland. How long did your series run?
You actually had a couple
of them. When I first connected with you, you had a separate one, and Cav had one, and then you guys ended up combining your series.
Right.
So, that's been a long time. So how long were you running a series there?
Well, I started in 97. I was doing something called Soul Poetry at Another Level, and then that venue moved to another location, and I ended up in a venue downtown called Robin's Nest.
Okay.
So I think that's probably about the time that we met. And then after Robin's Nest, I moved to the Cleveland Museum of Art and partnered with Kavanna Faith Walker. And he had created this event called the Nia Coffee House. And then I basically hosted the Nia Coffee House from 2001 until about 2012, 2013.
Wow.
And then the coffee house went on hiatus, even though we had created a Facebook page. We weren't really doing events, but now the Nia Coffee House is about to be reborn in the space that I've created here in Cleveland called Larchmere Arts.
Okay, tell us about that.
Larchmere Arts is essentially a cultural center. It is on the books as a photography studio and gallery, but it's a very unique spot. It's 850 square feet, so it's very intimate, and we have it purposed as an art gallery. So if you came in today, you would see portrait-style photographs on the long walls in the space.
Let me cut you off for just a second. So what Vince has not mentioned is that he's also a gifted photographer and actually did the photography for the cover of his book and all of that. So this Larchmere project, you know, just ties into many elements of his creativity. Okay, now go ahead.
Right.
Commercial over.
So, you know, we had these photographs on the walls and everything, and then we've got this 10 by 15 stage that's built in, because this space used to be a consignment shop. So I guess they had merchandise for display. The stage is right in front of the front picture window.
Okay.
So when I saw this space, because I was invited in to join, you know, some others as photographers, and I looked at it and I was like, well, you know, we could do music in here. And we could do spoken word in here. And we can feature other artists. We can do video production in here. We can videotape the performances. We can do EPKs for musicians who need them. We can create shows for the World Wide Web. So I just saw this myriad of possibilities for this particular space. So,
okay.
We wanted to call it the cultural center, but we have a neighbor down the block who has a business. It's actually an Afrocentric bookstore called A Cultural Exchange.
Okay.
So we couldn't go with, you know, Larchmere Cultural Center because of the conflict in the titling. So we decided to call it Larchmere Art. to keep it simple.
Okay.
So Larchmere is the street that it's on, and it's an antiques district. So
mm-hmm.
it's well known throughout, you know, Cuyahoga County about this area. And then arts is the vehicle that, you know, we'll be going to reach the people. So, you know, in our mission statement, we talk about being multicultural, multigenerational, and
mm-hmm.
our mission is to raise cultural consciousness.
Awesome. I love that. Love that thought. Now, when so it's in the works. Now, when is your first open mic or your first event going to be?
We are talking about doing some events on the weekend of May 20th. So
okay.
what we like to do is feature an artist that we've approached about
mm-hmm.
doing a show there on the 20th. Then we want to have a musical event on the 21st. And then on the 22nd,
nice.
We want to have a Nia Coffee House event.
Awesome. Okay. That sounds wonderful. Now, what do you think is the key to having a successful long-running series? Because, you know, of course, we see stuff, you know, pop up and then it's gone. You know, but you ran your series for, you know, well over 10 years. What's the key, do
mm-hmm.
you think?
Well, I think, first of all, it's being committed to it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I mean, I was working a full-time job at the time. I was directing a television show. I was involved in some radio projects and so forth and so on. But, you know, I knew on first and third Tuesdays I had an event that I was committed to. So I put the time into promoting it and, you know,
mm-hmm.
trying to get folks into the space. And, you know, it was one of those things, who comes is who comes. And we had some
mm-hmm.
regulars and then we had new people come in and out, you know. But, you know, Cleveland noticed in the Cleveland Friday Magazine, somebody had somehow, you know, been exposed to it, and they made the Nia Coffee House one of the top 10 things to do if you're in Cleveland. So,
awesome.
You know, we were featured in, you know, newsprint and some, you know, blog sites and so forth and so on. So people knew what we were doing, and I think it was partly because we appealed to so many different types of people, you know, to young
mm-hmm.
people, to old people, to black people, white people. I mean, we even
mm-hmm.
had
mm-hmm.
a guy that was in his 60s who was deaf.
Mm-hmm.
He wasn't the type of person that you would expect to see at a poetry reading, but he would come
right.
in, he would have an interpreter with him to do sign
oh.
language and actually
really?
Bring his poem to life because he couldn't speak to us.
His
what he said was unintelligible to the common person.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm, sure.
But, you know, the content was what it was, and it was difficult to follow sometimes because his manner of speech was different than ours. But, you
mm-hmm.
know, every once in a while, something he would say made sense. For instance,
yes.
I remember distinctly one time he did a poem. And in the poem, he said the line, "Don't eat yellow snow."
Hmm. Okay.
And that line, okay. We just busted out laughing when we heard it because we knew exactly what he was talking about.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It was just an interesting guy, and he was probably one of the people who came to our event more than any other person in the history of the Nia Coffee House.
Wow, I love that story.
Yes.
So, in addition to running this the poetry series, you're actually part of a group. So you're Vince Robinson and the Jazz Poets. So why don't you tell
yes.
our listeners about this amazing group of musicians that you perform with?
Yes, the original jazz poet is Derrick James. I met him in the parking lot of a music store here in the Cleveland area called Sam Ash, and this was when I started soul poetry at another level. There was also a young man that I was acquainted with through college named Kevin Conwell, and Kevin was my first drummer. So I started out with just the two. I had a coworker named Orville Oliver who played guitar, so I invited him to join us, and that was the original Jazz Poets.
Okay.
Since we started, Kevin Conwell has become a Cleveland City Councilman. I just recently lost a drummer, Reggie Holmes, who succumbed to a battle with cancer. Yeah, he's a just a tremendous person. I mean, I just I can't say enough about him. But you know, over the years, I've had the opportunity and the pleasure to connect with a number of musicians in Cleveland, and you know, I'm still connected with Derek and a few of the others that have been a part of the Jazz Poet. So I perform with them. I also perform with another group called Team Bada, which means vital earth force energy. And we do world music. So vocalist Simi Davis and drummer Arno Wrench. We have a percussionist who is the founder of the group who is very versed in Yoruba. He's versed in, you know, Portuguese and Spanish. He knows the rhythms. You know, he knows the language. He knows those cultures. So we do a fusion of, you know, African and Latin culture in our music. Yeah.
Now, I didn't know about the second group, so that's very exciting. And next time I come to the 216, I'm going to have to check you guys out for sure.
Yes.
So, and you're a keyboardist, is that right?
Yes. I'm a pianist at heart. I can't carry my piano to my gig, so I've been forced into becoming a keyboardist. But I play an instrument that has weighted keys and it has real piano action, and it will give me that piano voice and it will give me other voices. So, yes.
Okay. All right. So you were saying you guys have a performance coming up when?
Yeah, we're going to be performing on the second weekend of June at a venue called the Happy Dog at the Euclid Tavern.
Oh, okay.
And yeah, I believe that date is June 11th. I can check my calendar and let you know for sure, but I know it's the second weekend in June, so we'll be at the Happy Dog at the Euclid Tavern. We've actually done two shows there already. We performed at the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame and Museum on King Day of this year, we have some other gigs that are lined up for the summer, and we're also working with a musician from the Daz Band. His name is Michael Calhoun. He's one of the founders of the group. He co-wrote some of their most prominent tunes. So we have him working with us as a guitarist.
Okay. Sounds wonderful. So you have so many talents and so many interests, and even though they're all kind of related, how do you find time to hone all of your skills and not neglect one of your gifts?
It's a great question. And I've always kind of wondered it myself, but you know, you just do certain things when it's time to do those things. You know, for instance, I do a show on this entity called Cable 9. It's a cable station in Macedonia, Ohio, and we have programming throughout the year. And what we do is we tape two or three shows in one night. So, you know, I'll produce segments for the show, and now I'm hosting the show. So, you know, I do my, you know, lining up my guests and all of that, you know, doing the scripting it, how I'm going to do it and so forth and so on. And then on that day, I record all those shows, station management edits and puts those shows together, and then they air for an entire month. So even though I'm not involved in the production on a week-in and week-out basis, I've accomplished creating that content for that particular station, and I have shows that are literally, you know, around the calendar. I do a radio show on Saturday mornings. I'm not executive producing that show, so most of the time, unless the host can't make the show, I just show up Saturday mornings at 10:50, and I'm on the air at 11:05 and off the air by noon, you know. It requires some input, but, you know, it just, most of it just requires my talent, you know. With the bands, of course, there's the commitment to rehearsal and then the practice time and all of that, and you have to stay committed to that to stay sharp, because if you don't play, you lose your chops real quickly. You know, I just, you know, and we've had conversations about this, but, you know, I just realized that the Creator gave me certain gifts.
Mm-hmm.
And with that giving, there is an obligation to carry out what has been bestowed upon me. So
absolutely.
With that understanding and knowing what my purpose on earth is, it's not really a hard fit. You know,
mm-hmm.
as human beings on this earth, we are gifted with the ability to choose. We can choose
right.
what we want to do and choose what we don't want to do. And because
mm-hmm.
I just happen to feel that I'm one of the conscious individuals on earth, you know, in the midst of a lot of people who are not necessarily conscious or as conscious as they should be, I realize that I have to do my part in, you know, promoting consciousness.
Sure.
So, you know, that's why I do what I do. I do it because I know it's my responsibility as a child of the universe to do so.
Okay. Great answer. Love that. So why don't you tell our listeners where your book can be purchased and how they may follow you on social media?
Okay. Well, the easiest way to get my book is to see me. But, you know, we
okay.
do have Amazon.com, and the book is on Amazon.com. So if you put me in as an author, Vince Robinson, or the title Got Words with a question mark,
mm-hmm.
you can purchase the book online, and it's listed as $15.95.
Okay.
I do book signings. I do featured readings, so
mm-hmm.
I'm available for anyone who might be interested in hearing my work live and in living color. I am on Facebook. I'm Vince Robinson, 18. If my email address on Facebook is vince.robinson.18. So if you put Vince Robinson and Kent State, it'll take you to my page. I also have a Vince Robinson and the Jazz Poets page. The radio program is 360 Info Network,
okay.
and you can find that on Facebook as well. I just recently opened an Instagram account. I haven't used it yet. I'm also the Jazz Poet on Twitter. So
okay.
As I become more familiar with social networking, I'm going to step up my game, so to speak, and start leveraging that, you know, in the interest of, you know, I mean, as an artist, you sell yourself. I mean, that's,
mm-hmm.
that's the plain and simple of it. So,
right.
you know, in order for me to boost my sales, you know, I'm going to get involved in the game as it should be played, so to speak.
Okay. Sounds good. So just to kind of recap something we talked about earlier, you were saying how you started writing and you wrote for decades before you finally decided, okay, now is the time for me to put this book out. So
mm-hmm.
what parting words would you have for someone who has a dream deferred? What would you say to that person?
I would say, most importantly, if you have a dream, do what you can to carry it out. You know, people say, one day I would like to be a published author. Well, what's standing in your way? You know,
mm-hmm.
There's a certain stigma that goes along with being self-published. But at the same time, you can submit manuscripts to a lot of different publishers and get rejected over and over and over again. So if you leave it up to them, you would never be published. And
mm-hmm.
basically, the reason that they want to publish you is because they want to make money. It's not about them
mm-hmm.
getting your story out. They have to see something in your work that leads them to believe that it will be profitable for them. And if they don't see it, then they're going to say no. They're not
mm-hmm.
going to believe in you the way you believe in you. So
great.
I would say
yeah.
that if you can't get published the conventional way, look at doing it yourself. And you get out
mm-hmm.
of it what you put into it. If you don't promote it, you can't expect people to know about it, you know.
That's right.
A lot of times people will buy a book from you just because you asked them to, just because
mm-hmm.
they want to have a piece of you, so to speak, just because they
mm.
can look at you and say, hey, you know, my friend so-and-so is a published author. They have as
yeah.
much pride about you being an author as you do. But,
yes.
you know, but if you don't have a book and you don't have product, then you can't have that conversation. So, you know, the whole thing is just to do it. As I was saying before, if you got an idea for a story, write the story. You know, otherwise, it's just an idea, you know. But, again, if you're given those gifts, if you're given those talents, then it's your responsibility to use them and to see them through. Because, you know, one of the things that plagues us as a people in this country is that we don't own anything and we don't sell anything. And all we do is buy things, you know. And then we complain about having to go to a job every day and do something that is absolutely meaningless to us other than collecting a paycheck. So if you have a talent or a skill, create something, sell something. Yeah. Let that sustain you, you know, and you can get to a point where you don't have to go to that job anymore. I'm not saying quit your day job right now and go full steam. You know, be practical about it. You know, have a plan about it, but execute it. That would be my words of encouragement.
Well, Vince, it has certainly been a pleasure having you on the show. It's always just a pleasure to connect with you anyway, but, you know, to have you here sharing your passion and being able to connect with our listeners, it's just been wonderful. So why don't you keep us abreast of what you're doing so that we can continue to support you and have you back on the show and all that. So proud of you. You know, you inspire people. Oh, thank you. You inspire people even when you don't even know that you're being an inspiration. So, you know, you just keep on doing you, you know, and the more you do you, the more you give others wings to, you know, their wings to fly. So just so proud of you. But
Tamika, I would say the same thing about you. You know, I've seen your trajectory. I've seen, you know, your works. I've heard you talk about things and I've seen you accomplish them. And, you know, you're a very resourceful person and a very knowledgeable person, you know, and believe it or not, you know, I'm pushing folks your way just so that they can take advantage of your wealth of knowledge and skill and understanding. And I will be calling you to get some guidance on a few things that I'm trying to put together right now too, because I know, you know, we've talked about some things and I want to see them through, but I commend you for what you're doing, and I thank you for the opportunity to share my work with your audience.
Oh, yes, my pleasure. I'll talk with you soon. Have a great evening.
Peace be with you. Okay. You too.
And you as well. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Before we bring our next guest on, we'll hear a word from our sponsor. Well, we're supposed to hear a word from our sponsor.
Scores of authors from across the nation will autograph books on Saturday, April 30th at the 7th Annual Dayton Book Expo. In addition to book signings, the Ohio-based event includes sessions for aspiring authors, a kids' zone, and a free journal for book lovers. For details, call 888-802-1802 or visit DaytonBookExpo.com. Dayton Book Expo, where book lovers connect.
If you are just tuning in, you're listening to In the Spotlight, and I am your host, Tamika Patrice Kane. We've just been talking with poet and author Vince Robinson. Next, I'd like to bring on author Phyllis Forrest. Phyllis, welcome to the show.
Good evening. How are you, Tamika?
I'm very well. How are you? So glad to have you with us tonight.
Thank you so much. I appreciate being here.
Yes. So... So your book, through a child's eyes. So initially, you reached out to the book club for a review, and one of our reviewers read it, and I was so moved. I haven't had a chance to read it yet, but I was so moved by her review of it, and I just remember her talking about it and just saying what an emotional read it was. So why don't you tell our listeners about your book, Through a Child's Eyes?
Through a Child's Eyes is about a teenage boy who becomes infatuated with a 7-year-old girl, and he plots and schemes to infiltrate her innocence by befriending her mother. Doing things like crossing paths, making small talks, until eventually they started having conversations. And more, they would talk every time they saw each other because it came kind of normal. And then one day he just blatantly just followed her home. She didn't know at the time when she had befriended him that he was a sexual deviant.
Okay. Okay. Now, what was your motivation for writing this story?
My motivation was, it took me a while to get around to writing it because actually Through a Child's Eyes is my personal story. This is exactly what happened to me. And it took me a while to get my mind wrapped around as far as how I wanted to write it. I always knew I would write it when I got out of my nightmare, but I just didn't know how to do it because I lacked a lot of maturity in life experience at the time at the age of 21. So eventually when my life calmed down and my kids were gone and it was just me and my dog, I finally sat down to write it because I wanted everyone to get an understanding of how these type of people move. And I felt like I had a great understanding because all in all, by default, I was raised by him.
Okay. So would you say that based on the feedback that you're getting from others, you know, do you feel like you accomplished your goal? Was there something specific that you wanted to bring out? And do you feel like you accomplished that goal?
Yes, I feel like that I have accomplished the goal, not to its entirety, but I think that my whole point was to get through to mainly I target single mothers because basically I target them because basically they are the ones that's being preyed on. It's so many different titles that a man could come in when you're single and you have children that he can infiltrate, you know, your sanctity of your home. So I really wanted to concentrate on mothers because I know that we have the situations where kids are snatched out of school in bushes and things like that. But basically, this problem is at home.
Right.
Most of the people
right.
you talk to that have been sexually abused, it was always someone they were familiar with, someone they loved, and someone they trusted.
Mm-hmm.
And because of this, this is the reason why I wanted to bring out my book, because with me spending so much time with him and he became transparent to me, I know the trick that he played to get a hold to so many children, because it wasn't just me. It was me and my two sisters and my brother, and then it was four other families, maybe totaling about maybe 16 kids simultaneously.
Yes. So when that's kind of a very intense, you know, thing to grow up dealing with. You know, did you feel like you were all alone, or did you know that your siblings were being violated as well?
No, actually, and that's the crazy part. At 10 years old, he came to live with us. My mom let him come live with us. And crazy because it was four of us and none of us knew. We did not know about the other person. We got older, and when we got older and we started discussing it, is when we realized that he was sexually abusing all four of us in our home.
Yeah.
Under the same roof, right up under my mother's nose, and none of us knew.
Yeah. Okay. Yes.
That's why I wanted to get this book out because, they some little sneaky little stuff.
You know, so you bring up an interesting point because, you know, many times kids are afraid, you know, to share what's going on. You know, they feel like either the person that they tell won't believe them, or they feel like, you know, somehow they are at fault, or, you know, the person who's doing the violating the predator has, you know, threatened them or their family members. You know, when you told your mother, was she receptive?
Let me comment on that for 1 second before I answer that question. Those reasons was never any of my reasons. That's one of the reasons why I wrote my book, is because, to be totally honest, I didn't know to tell it.
Okay.
I didn't know. My mother, we never had that kind of discussion. And you got to remember, this was maybe back in the 70s, where it wasn't talked about, where there was no newspaper articles, no internet, no Oprah, it was always in your face. So my reasoning was I didn't know to tell it.
Okay. I got you. I got you.
Right.
Okay.
So by the time my mom found out, I was 7 years in because he started that with me at the age of 7 years old.
Okay.
It wasn't actually that I had to tell her at that time. He had got me pregnant.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
And the way he had, for so many years, had been manipulating my mother and my family and her thoughts, he, in his own charismatic way, flipped it around on me and made it seem like it was my fault. Like, I approached
mm-hmm.
him.
Mm-hmm.
And my mother believed.
Yeah. Okay. So,
I can tell that this is really leaving you a loss for words.
Well, I mean, you know, it's sensitive. So, you know, I don't want to just, you know, and then, of course, you want people to read the books. So I want to have you going into everything, you know. So, yes, you know, so now that you are putting your story out there, you know, and your mother does know, you know, is she instrumental in helping you get the message out? You know, does she have something to say to that population of women, you know, from the mother's standpoint? You know, she's got to have a tremendous amount of guilt that all this stuff was going on, you know, and you know, a mother protects. And here, you know, she wasn't able to do that because she was unaware. So, you know, is she a part of your mission?
Not at all. Matter of fact, I wrote this book in 2012, and I haven't
mm-hmm.
spoken to her since. She's not talking.
All right.
Before I decided to write my book, and because I told my truth and I was going to use my real name,
mm-hmm.
I talked to the most important people in that circle, which were my sisters, my children, and my mom.
Mm-hmm.
How would they feel about me writing the book? And they all agreed, you know, they all supported me. So it was
mm-hmm.
kind of messed up when I wrote it and then she got mad at me.
Yeah. You know, it's kind of an interesting thing because, you know, you go through what you go through, you know, and family dynamics kind of are what they are. And yet, in the midst of sharing your story is always attached to somebody else, you know. And so it's kind of a gray line sometimes because, you know, it's like, well, where do you draw the line? Or, you know, do I silence myself and what I need to say just to protect everybody else? And yet, you know, what you've gone through and your story deserves validation and it deserves to be heard, you know, even though it exposes someone else's stuff as well, you know. So I'm glad that you had the strength and the courage, you know, to put it out there and to say, you know, this happened to me, you know. And so was writing the book part of your healing process? Would you say that you healed from what you've went through?
Yeah, oh, yes. I think by the time I actually sat down and wrote the book, I had gone through everything I was going to go through about the book. I think that
mm-hmm.
that particular time I had put everything in perspective, and I pretty much downloaded and deleted it.
Okay.
As far as having any type of stigma about it, as far as
gotcha.
Having, you know, an emotional, being an emotional mess about it. I was already
mm-hmm.
past that by the time I wrote the book, and I think that that was a good thing because
mm-hmm.
I don't think I would have been able to write the book the way I wrote it if I was going to go through a lot of emotional turmoil about it.
Okay. All right. So, you know, you're able to bring a couple of different elements from, you know, into your story, you know, as from the standpoint of being a child who's going through some things, but also since you've been a mother, you know, you have that element as well. You know, so as you, are you targeting two separate groups or are you just specifically dealing with the mothers at this point?
Well, you know, and actually it depends on how you process, how you comprehend. The book can
mm-hmm.
mean so many things. It depends on how you attach information. It can
mm-hmm.
mean so many things to people, but I think that the reason why I mostly targeted mothers, because like
okay.
I said, they are the ones that's dating. They,
right.
They are the ones who make the decisions for their children. They are the ones who's supposed to protect.
Mm-hmm.
So I targeted them because I think that has gotten to the point where we as mothers have become so selfish. And it's all about what we want out of life and whether or not we have a man that we just bring. We don't consider when we're dating this man and we're putting our, as I would like to say, our woman trap on him. Whether or not he's even worthy to come in and be a part of our household.
Right.
Because you're not considering the children at the time. You're just hoping that he likes them and they like him and that's good enough for you. And you're not even considering, you know, really getting to know him. Nowadays, women are meeting guys online, going out, you know, online on Friday, going out with him on Saturday. He comes over on Sunday and he moves in on Monday.
Right, right.
And so it's like you're moving so fast because you want a relationship, not considering that you are bringing a man into your household that you don't even know amongst your children.
So that is a very valid point. And I'm as you're talking, I'm wondering, okay, so what would you say are some of the signs then that mother needs to look for? You know, what are some red flags? Because sometimes they're there, but if you don't know what they are, you don't quite know how to process it and what to do with it. So what should they look for?
Well, like I said, I use my story to shed a lot of light on the situation. And basically, I go by how things went with me because manipulation is manipulation. Abusers all use the same level of manipulation regardless of what it is. And basically, I feel like the number one is when you notice that a certain individual is paying a certain individual child too much attention, that it's just way overboard. It's just too much. He's worried about how she's dressed and where she's going and where she's at and things like that. That's out of the norm. That is almost like he came over and his girlfriend wasn't there. I wanted to pay it. I want people to pay attention to when men label your children. When my girls were growing up, you couldn't call my daughter, my 6-year-old daughter, your little girlfriend. And things like that, because in my situation, that was the very first thing he said to me when he met me, was that I was his little girlfriend, and he took that literally. He literally made me his girlfriend at 7 years old.
Gotcha. Okay.
But I would like to say this. In my book, I'm not really necessarily concentrating on red flags and the things that you should pay attention to as far as what another person's intentions may be. I don't care anything about that because if a person wants to hide something about themselves, they will do any and everything to hide themselves. What I am concentrating mostly on is that I feel like that when women bring strangers into their household, they should follow certain structured rules and guidelines as far as their children are concerned. So it's not about what your intentions are. It's about how the mother is going to handle her household.
Okay.
You know, when we were growing up, there was no, you know, when we were growing up, there was no being in adult state. If our parents had something, we said hello, and we went into our rooms or we went outside.
That's true.
There was no, we didn't sit on laps after a certain age.
That's right.
And then it's certain things that she's not going to do any longer. It's, one of my biggest rules is allowing too much access to your children.
Okay.
You know what? Your child should not be having a relationship with an adult that you are not privy to the information and the conversations and the things that are being said and done to them.
Very true. Yes. Now, are you... no, go ahead. I didn't hear what you said.
No, I was saying because that person could be saying or telling them anything.
No, that's a very valid point. Yes. So, are you looking at you know, taking like the message of your book and, you know, like hitting the speaker circuit, or you're like, what is your goal with the book? How are you? How do you plan to reach that population? You know, with your message.
First of all, I would like to say that I did self-publish this book.
Okay.
I self-published it because the way that I wanted to write it with the realness and the in-your-face
mm-hmm.
information, I felt
okay.
like nobody that a traditional publishing company would take it and try to soften it because of what
mm-hmm.
size of the handle. So I self-published
okay.
my own book. And I've went through avenues as far as yourself, of someone who
mm-hmm.
recognized me and
mm-hmm.
invited me on your show. Mostly that's basically what's been happening is that people would see me on Facebook or social media, and they would contact me and ask me, would I be a part of their show? Or is certain, like, things that I would sign up for. But not only that, I did a 15-minute short film on my book.
Okay.
And it was a part of the International Black Film Festival in Nashville. So it's little things like that. And I always, like, enter it in contests, not necessarily to win, because you just
mm-hmm.
never know when they read it.
That's right. That's right.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
You never know. And I'm always, like, you know, everywhere I go, I try to sell books. I don't care if I'm at the airport, passing out flyers.
Yes.
I mean, basically, that's just a slow roll that I have to go into.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, it's all in God's journey. It's going to happen when it's going to happen, because I have received a lot of love and a lot of, you know, initial spotlight for it. Like, you know,
okay.
you, me and you've been going back and forth for a minute. You know,
yeah.
me and you've been going back for a couple of years
mm-hmm.
trying to work it out, and you never forgot about me.
Right.
You never, ever forgot about me. So, and that's how we ended up here right now, is because eventually you just let me contact her. And it was just like out of the blue, and I was so happy that you did. Thank you so much for recognizing
me. My pleasure. Yes. So, okay. Well, I was kind of asking about, you know, your, you know, like your, some of your plans, because, you know, if you were deciding that you wanted to go, like, on the speaker circuit with your message, then I would suggest that you, you know, make a plug for that and let people know how they can reach out to you for you to come in and speak to their groups and, you know, maybe talk to shelter directors and, you know, and things like that, you know, just anywhere where you could get an in, you know. So that's what I was kind of asking, you know, what was your goal with it? What did you want to do with it? You know, and where, how did you want to continue getting the message and stuff out there? You know, are you wanting to kind of stay kind of grassroots, where it's just, you know, hand to mouth and that sort of thing, and person to person, you know, or you're looking at going into, you know, larger. But based on your answer, I can see that you are looking at, you know, some of the larger platforms, you know, with you entering it into film festivals and things like that. So it definitely sounds like you have that you have a plan, you know, and I mean, it certainly is a message that needs to be told, you know, and, you know, from so many different standpoints, you know, because predators are predators, you know, and whether they are, you know, doing something like that in the home or they're putting the kids on the street or whatever, it's still stuff that, you know, that we sometimes as women, we have a blind eye to things, you know, we don't want to see, so we don't, you know, and we just close our eyes. And then other times we just don't know what we're looking at. You know, it's right there, but we don't know what we're looking at. So I'm glad that you had the strength and the courage to, you know, to pin your story and to just let it be raw and real and uncut, you know, and that you didn't shrink back because of opposition from people, you know. I'm really glad that you had a chance to do that. And that you have the boldness to say, you know, here's my story. And, you know, cause sometimes when you go through, you know, certain types of experiences, there's the stigma of shame that, you know, that stays attached. But, you know, it sounds like you have, if there was something that you dealt with where shame was concerned, it sounds like you've gotten over that, and that there it's not a ruling factor, you know, in how you choose to govern your life. And I think that is so awesome because, you know, that's kind of a part of the process of someone, you know, violating you. So I would say, you know, now that we're down to our last, you know, couple of minutes or whatever, what message would you say to a person who has lived through something similar to what you have, you know, and they may not have gotten to that place of healing and wholeness that you have, and they may be stuck. What do you say to that person?
Well, I've heard from quite a few readers and people that I have talked to, because I have done quite a few speaking engagements as well. They always ask me if I saw him or do I have anything that I would like to say to him? Or the majority of them, victims, they always say that they would like to be their abuser. I've never felt that way. I never felt that way, mainly because what could a top person possibly do or say that could justify something like that? So actually, there's no answer for it. So for you to go and speak to your abuser and ask them why and things and questions like that, it's not going to anything but make you mad, because there's never going to be a good enough reason or explanation for it. The thing that mostly what I tell people is you should not blame yourself. I put the blame where it was due. And the only answer really, the only answer really of why, you know, it was nothing wrong with you. It didn't have anything to do with the way that you look or how you act or something was wrong with you. The only reason why you were abused was because you were not protected, and he was who he was.
Right.
That's it.
Right.
I know that's simple, but it's complicated. But it is. It's basically simply because you just were not protected.
Yeah. You know, but I think that, you know, even though it's simple, I mean, sometimes that those are the most profound messages. You know, and so.
Yeah.
Yes, I mean, the person needs to hear, you know, it wasn't your fault. You know, it didn't have anything to do with you. This is somebody else. You got caught up in somebody else's issue. It has nothing to do with you. You know, it affected you, but had nothing to do with you. So, you know, no,
right.
I think that's a very profound message and very truthful. And I think sometimes, you know, when a person knows that the person who's speaking to them has walked down a similar path, then they can receive it a whole lot better, you know. And so because you've been so transparent with what you've gone through, you know, they know that it's coming from a real place. It's not just words. You know, somebody that they don't know they don't know their backstory, you know, or they haven't been through anything, they're going to look at someone else and say, you can't tell me that. You know, you just blew me off. But for someone who has walked it and has lived it, they'll know that those words are coming from a true place, and it would have greater value. You know, so absolutely, you know, absolutely, those words are meaningful and they're profound, and it would strike just the right chord, you know, for someone who needs to hear those words. So that is, I'm glad that you shared that. Now, do you have any?
That's exactly why I wrote the book, because I felt like somebody said it was so many survivors out here needed to see me.
Yes.
And realize that they weren't alone and that it wasn't their fault. Put the blame where the blame goes. And I think it's a lot of times, too, because once my book came out, I talked to so many people who never told no one. No one. To this day, mother still does not know, because one thing about being the victim is that you turn out to be the protector. So a lot of people don't want to even tell their mom that this happened to them, because now they don't want their mother to feel bad.
Right. Right.
They don't want their mother, you know, to feel like she failed. So a lot of people have never even addressed it with their parents or their mom, so she even knew what they were going through.
Yeah. I understand.
Yeah. I got a lot of that once I released that book. I had so many people come and tell me when they had never told anyone.
Yes. Wow, that is such a great responsibility that comes with it. But it seems like you are definitely up for the challenge of that, you know, of being able to, you know, to take on their stories and to take on their experiences, you know, and be kind of a kind of a safe place, you know, and everyone needs a safe place. Mm-hmm. Now, do you have any, first of all, tell our listeners where your book can be purchased and how they can follow you on social media or reach out to you if they want you to come speak, you know, at their events and things like that. Let's talk about that first.
Okay, my book is on Amazon. You can get a physical copy or an e-reader, or you can go to my website for a autographed copy, which is phyllistforest@gmail.com. It's www.phyllistforest.com. And you
now,
can
you
go
spell
right
your name a little differently,
Twitter.
So spell your name for
yes,
them.
It's phyllist Forest, that's Forrest, @gmail.com.
Mm-hmm.
That's my email address. I just want to keep giving out that email address. I don't know why.
that's okay.
But that's on my website if you want an autograph copy. But
mm-hmm.
I'm on,
okay.
You can find me anywhere on all social media, Facebook, Instagram, Snapchat, Google+, LinkedIn.
Mm-hmm.
I'm on all social media. Just put in my name and you can find me.
Okay. All right. Now, do you
and
have any...
Wants to get in touch with,
No, go ahead.
Anyone who wants to get in touch with me, they can go on my website. I have a contact form on my website.
Mm-hmm. Gotcha. Now, do you have any speaking engagements coming up or book signings or anything where people can come out and meet you?
I don't have any speaking engagements coming up, but I am attending the... just on the AAMBC.
Oh yeah. Mhm.
Award show in Atlanta with Tamika Newhouse.
Okay. Uh huh.
In which I just recently signed with Delphine Publishing.
Oh, did you? Oh, congratulations.
Yeah.
That's awesome. Okay.
Thank
good for you.
And next on Sunday, I am shooting a documentary of Through a Child's Eye.
Okay.
In LA.
Okay. Now is that where you're housed? You live on the West Coast?
Excuse me?
You're on the West Coast?
Yes.
Or are you just there for the documentary? Oh, you're okay.
No,
okay.
I live in San Diego, but LA is 2 hours away from me, so I'm going to drive there and go through the documentary there. But I always keep my social media updated to the places in which I have engagements and book signings and where I'll be. So just keep up with me on social media, and usually you can keep up with me pretty well.
Okay. Sounds good. Well, thank you so much for coming out, and I'm glad we finally got a chance to connect and have this conversation, you know. And thank you also for for the life-changing work that you're doing. You know, for every child who is either getting a chance to tell their story or who is going to now be protected from something like this happening to them, you know, like just know that your words have power and, you know, your story is not in vain. And, you know, so again, thank you for your willingness to put it out there, you know, and to do this life-changing work, you know, so keep us abreast of what you're doing, you know, and maybe we can have you back on the show. Would love to talk to you again and you know, and just see your progress and all of that. And of course, I'm assuming that there's going to be more works from you and that sort of thing.
Yeah.
So would love to have you back on again.
Okay, and thank you so much, Tamika, for having me and recognizing me. I really appreciate it.
Oh, it's my pleasure, honey. My pleasure.
Okay.
So, again, listeners, we have had poet and author Vince Robinson and author Phyllis Forrest with us tonight. If you've missed any part of today's podcast, you can hear it in its entirety about 5 minutes after the show airs. Thank you for tuning in. We encourage you to support the authors who appear on the show. Of course, if you like what you hear, pass on the word to others. Supporting those in the literary arena is what we're all about. Join me for the next edition of In the Spotlight with special guest authors Dominique L. Watson and Lady Stiletto on Sunday, May 1st at 3 p.m. Eastern Standard Time right here on WALN, the Abundant Living Station. Until we meet again, make each day a great day on purpose. And don't forget,